Welcome to Business Second Opinion with Carol Sanford, a respected thought leader in the world of business design for growing people in order to grow your business. She always offers a contrarian view on what sacred temples of wisdom, such as the Harvard Business Review, advise. Her approach is based on living systems research and her four decades of practice with Fortune 500 companies and rockstar entrepreneurs. I'm Zach Swartout, and I'm your host. Welcome to Business Second Opinion, the podcast that digs deep to answer questions about business and business practice you may not know you need to ask, but we believe you should be asking for the benefit of your understanding and your business's ethics and practice. In the process of answering them, we give you a second opinion, usually a contrarian opinion, but that is well-tested and proven to give the outcomes you really want without the side effects. We make our thinking explicit so you can apply it to another topic, and we hope educating all around. I'm Zach Swartout, and with me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big and hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
So what question are we throwing against the wall today to see what sticks?
Well, you know, I've been noticing this term, regeneration, which I've been using for 42 years, is suddenly being added to everything. And I don't think maliciously. I mean, I hear about regenerative economy. I'd love to have one of those. Regenerative agriculture, which we need for the food system. Regenerative development and design, which my friends Regenesis wrote a book about. And regenerative certification, which I'm not sure can exist. All of this happened in just the last few years. And suddenly it's a hot and competitive subject. And people are trying to own some space in the field to show that they're different, and they keep referencing the term regenerative. So my question that I'm working on today is, are people really doing something different than they were before? Are they just renaming what they're doing because it's the trend and it's up to date? I call that kind of copycatting, beat to fit and paint to match. So the question I'm asking, how can you tell for yourself and for others whether you're just borrowing ideas and beating to fit and painting to match?
So that's a great question, because I notice in a lot of businesses I've worked with, they tend to be unable to restrain themselves from gravitating towards the shiny new thing their competitors are moving towards. It's like they're unable to stick to some organizing idea that keeps them centered.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this actually reminds me, we have a great sponsor for Business Second Opinion podcast that is pursuing a regenerative path rigorously and transparently. And they have one of my favorite deep business ideas. They're using ancient wisdom coupled with modern innovation to give vitalizing beverages you could be proud of. Their rallying cry is that they are a band of revolutionaries for the greater good. We are rebel. They are born out of a conscious collaboration between global thought leaders whose sole purpose was to address the malfunctioning global food system through a regenerative business model that would respect, uplift, and delight the world. They are a modern-day botanical treasure hunters grounded in ancient herbal wisdom, identifying and gathering the very best the plant queendom has to offer. They curate these diverse, ethically sourced whole roots, extracts, berries, barks, and leaves into delicious beverages with vibrant flavors that deliver your daily dose of exceptional goodness. Through the art of food and taste, they welcome you to their tribe in the world of plants, to the world of Rebel. We are so proud to be associated with them. So, Carol, why does this answer to the question matter for us today?
By the way, I'm very excited to have Rebel with us also, and particularly because they're asking the same question. They're working from the idea of what is regeneration. And the reason it matters is regeneration is a process that only happens in living systems. So it requires us to learn to see and work with life as though it's alive. What a funny idea. Really crazy. But we spend so much time damaging the things that are alive, from our children to nature to the communities we live in. We approach them somehow as a list of things that have to be worked on, you know, economics or safety, that long list. And we do it in such a fragmented way that we're putting our planet, our social systems, like how we govern, all at risk. If we could really see how regeneration works in the living being situation we're in, we could be more effective and we could grow healthy communities, healthy life sheds, and grow our children as whole and contributing entities. if we just use the word regeneration and keep doing a variation of what we were doing or some amelioration or some improvement, we lose the real potential of understanding what living systems bring to us and how they are as organized entities.
So, Carol, you're saying, I think, or what you're saying is that the idea is that if we approach things in a fragmenting way, this leads us to create more fragmentation. That seems important because most of the issues we face in the world and in business come down to an inability to reconcile this fragmentation back to wholeness. I feel like we see this reflected everywhere. So let's dig into this a little bit. What are the parameters for regeneration as you see them?
I see it through a system that's drawn from living systems and a set of questions that people could ask. And I've been doing this since I was young because these seven windows are something that I learned from my maternal grandfather, who was half Mohawk on my mother's side and his mother's side. Now, I've evolved them for modern times, and of course, they've all passed through my head, so my great-great-grandfather, who was full-blood Mohawk, might turn over his grave. But I'm happy to share them because they've been very helpful to me.
I love that idea of a system of seven principles that provide a path to explore. To me, that means not only are they foundational, but somehow interdependent as well. I had a feeling you were going to make us work today. So what's number one here?
Yes, I make me work, so you have to work too. I start with anytime I'm looking at something, if I want to think of it regeneratively, or I do this when I'm looking at other people's work who are claiming it's regenerative, and I ask, have I identified the whole I'm working with? You can't be working regeneratively unless you're working with a whole. You can tell if it's a whole, if it's distinctive, and nature would call it a whole. Like nature would say, that child is a whole. That life shed is a whole. They wouldn't say a river is a whole because it's an aspect of a life shed. If it has organized itself as a whole or committed to being so, then the odds are good that it is. Like a family organizes itself as a whole, and so does a business or some nonprofit agency. I also notice that if it's a whole, it can change its own structure. Somebody else doesn't do that to it. It'll have systems that work to keep it alive. They can be transportation systems in a city. They can be organic systems in a human being. They can be psychological systems in a child or a family. And it also can change its processes every time it engages. In other words, it doesn't have to be mechanical. It can improve things. I can put on my clothes differently each time or wash the dishes differently each time or engage with my child. So if I am looking at it, I would see that it is a whole by making those kind of questions. So you can name your child or you can name the school system. You can found a not-for-profit and commit to its health and vitality, not only for itself, but for what it serves. A city can even be founded, and you set up systems to govern it. They are all a whole. So if you're working with a fragment, a part, or a problem, you're not working regeneratively because you're working with a non-whole, and therefore you can't see it as alive. It's just a slice.
So as you're speaking, I was imaging my family, actually, and myself as a father. And so I immediately thought of my relationship with my stepdaughter. And I notice how when I get upset or I get hooked by some part of her personality, I lose sight of her as a whole person. Is that kind of an example of what you mean?
That is an excellent example. And we do this with children all the time. They're not a good student. They're not disciplined. They're screwing up in soccer practice or they're fighting among one another. And so we lose the sense that this is a whole being in front of us working on becoming more whole in the world. Yes, that's an excellent example.
So why is the identifying and naming of a whole important and even number one in the system?
Yeah, and it is number one because it's a foundation. So the reason it's important, well, it makes us put our mind to work, imaging a living system at work. So thinking about your daughter, your stepdaughter, you can begin to see her as a whole in all her activities, all the way she is. And you can just ask the question, what is the whole I'm working on? If you're thinking, trying to find the whole, you begin to see it as alive and invites you to think of them as a living system. So you can quickly ask if it has the ability to change itself and its processes every time. The question evokes something alive. Regeneration only happens in living systems. So you cannot answer this question, and others can't agree with you or they can't agree with you that what you're tackling really is alive and whole if you can do that kind of identifying it. It also helps you make sure whether you're not on a path of regeneration or just, again, modifying, ameliorating, beating to fit, painting to match. Yep.
Okay. So when I approach her in, say, like a fixing mode, I'm actually not looking at her as a whole person. So that actually sets a pretty clear boundary for me to watch for. So now I'm curious. So what's number two?
Okay. So the great thing about getting the sense of a whole is you can do number two. And these are the two that are left off of what most people do when they call something regeneration. So in order to move to the next aspect of a living system, we have to see the whole we've identified as unique. We have to see it as different from other past and present, and that it cannot be replicated by others. This is a principle of living systems that is about essence. The principle is that every living being has an essence that is formed in its origin. This idea is that we can see every child, even when they're small, and you think about this with kids you've been around or your own kids, and you know, even from a tiny age, you can tell something is very distinctive about them. You'll end up trying to describe what they're going to be when they grow up, and of course, we have no idea, but we know that this being is unique. This ability to see this happens before they get socially conditioned by what we think they need to be or what society expects them to be. And if there's enough freedom in their lives, it shows up again when they hit their teenage years, when they again drive us crazy by not conforming. They process life differently. Yep, that's a verb. They process life, look at life differently, make sense of it differently. They see the world differently than us and than our siblings. They'll even fight to be seen as a distinctive being. Sometimes they fall into trying to be like their friends, but they actually always still want to be distinctive. Part of what learning to be regenerative is learning to see and engage with the essence quality of a being, of this whole that we named. I do this essence reveal with every founder of every business I work in, whether they're dead or alive. I've gone back with DuPont 200 and something years, really looking at its founding. We do it with the city. When I'm actually doing economic development work or building co-ops, I pull in my colleagues from Regenesis who are masters at doing this for economic and community development, where they reveal something called the story of place, which has the essence of that place and its work to do. And then we all use that, and they do it continuously to source innovation, to source the understanding of what this community could be. All of this makes this place source then, not place based, because place based is too human centered. But when you nearly know what the story is and what's connected to it, then you can source all of your thinking about that essence. And the same is true for a child. You can discover and relate to their essence of this whole.
So can there be many different versions of humans and essences?
I'm asked that question a lot. Like, I'm saying every entity has a unique essence, and people go, whoa, there can't be that many. Aren't there some categories? Well, that's really a problem of not having started with a whole. At the level of personality and appearance, of course, there are overlaps, but science tells us that even that does not limit the fact that everything has a unique essence. There are no two living beings which are identical in cellular structure, and even psychology tells us the same. And if you go back with all our wisdom sages through all the ancient traditions, they say it can never be duplicated. And that personality, which is what we see mostly on the surface, kind of covers up that distinctiveness. In fact, even a small little exercise can begin to have you see and understand the differences of the people you meet and find the variations they have. There are an endless number of essences.
Okay, so as I'm imaging my stepdaughter again, I notice that she's testing these different aspects of her personality as she continues to grow. And where I get me hooked and triggered is around these aspects, probably because they're reflecting something in me. Clearly, there's work for me to do here around continuing to reveal her essence for myself. And I can see how much more powerful it is a place to stand for me with her than blaming and being upset at her as she's going through this process. So that's actually leading me. And I'm wondering now, where are the next principles of living systems? So let's go on to number three.
Yeah, it is easy to get stuck. And I'm glad you commented on that, because we do it even with businesses. You know, I do this essence work with a business, and then they say, but people aren't getting it. Well, there's work to do with it. The revealing of it is the first part of it. And even with an individual, I always give people assignments. So let's talk about what the next one is. So if you know what essence is of a whole, Then the third one that I'm going to give you here kind of is required to do the next one. And it also predicts what we're going to do on number four. Let's just do those two together. That'll help. So we use the phrase, and I'm sure you've heard it either where you work or at the school your kids are in, helping them achieve their full potential. From parenting to school settings to employees in a company, it's usually used in the sense of we're disappointed in someone or we see them not putting in their full effort. We may think they're a little lazy or maybe being mechanical, kind of asleep, if we know what that term means. And they're not really working on overcoming the shortfalls in these surface personality and characteristics, which are conditioned. They're not essence. So they're not, we then see them as, you know, falling short. It's difficult then to try and figure out how we work on helping achieve their full potential if we don't have a reference point, because the reference point becomes other people's list of them, not something from them. In a living system, the principle of, you know, essence has to be revealed and expressed leads to this next principle, which is that is the source of potential. So we might say for a child, how are they unique in the world? What's their essence? What can they contribute? How can they find their place to express that essence? But that essence has to be developed. It can't just be known. I mean, you, Zach, can't just name that in your stepdaughter. It has to be developed. We know what it's like to feel not being ourselves. That often is an experience of our essence not being brought forward, not being developed. We're playing a role that we don't fit and we can't quite step into. And that's at work. We often feel, oh my goodness, I don't know how I got into this job. It just doesn't fit me. It becomes really hard to be creative and hard to spark innovation if that's part of our job, and it should be a part of all jobs. Maybe even just to be successful, it's hard. We know that we often find ourselves in a role that we can't do that. But sometimes we find ourselves in a role where we're growing and contributing and that we'll feel really fulfilled. So achieving potential is not about the external evaluation. That's what's really important here. Not about somebody else's standards, somebody else's competencies, somebody else's generic ideals about what you should be, but about you being yourself, a singularity in a sky of other singular stars, the one of one. No other exists, and you cannot be copied. Same is even true for a business achieving its potential. You start with its essence, but it's lost when others think that they should be something else and drive in another direction. In order to get to this distinctiveness, the company all is paying attention to the essence, or both parents are paying attention to the essence of a child. And you can even see it get foggy when you have a new leader taken, a new boss, somebody is brought in from outside or promoted, and they want their own personality overlaying the essence of this business. That happens to us as children, and what we do to children too. We want them to be like us, or like a sibling, or like some famous person, or like some ideal we have. But each has their own essence and their unique path, and this becomes really the source of how we find potential. It's that potential of that essence and helping it be revealed and then developed and expressed, which leads us to the fourth one, if you'll allow me. Number four is critical because to get the realization of that essence, you have to see it as moving, not as fixed, not only as just growth-oriented, where you get new technical skills, new ways to think, but you're really working on the development of the things that get in the way of the person. Kind of at a being level, you're removing the distractions that pull them away from essence, like in their own mind, stories they tell themselves. We're born with the capacity to have this potential be realized. But in the average family, the average job, the average school we grow up in, we don't get developed. Instead, we're socialized and conditioned through our teachers, our churches, our bosses to be and do in a particular way and to meet the standards and mores of a society and community. So the development principle calls for building off of these first three, knowing what the whole is, knowing their essence, seeing it as having potential. Now we have a chance, and the first and foremost process is for humans to learn to live in a living system. I'd say that's the first developmental process, is instead of learning to see in a fixed system where you're conditioned, is how do you see things alive? And we're very bad in our culture of understanding how humans and living systems work. I studied psychology, and some of the others of you probably did, and psychology tries to tell us how humans work, but they have no idea that most psychology is based on very outdated and counter-human, counter-living system studies. We're told either, depending on which way you go, that we're like machines, like computers, or we're told that we're like rats that are incentivized through the way it triggers in our brain that we get incentivized. And the humans don't have choice, and although they do. I mean, that's what's amazing to me, how false all of this old psychology is, that we as humans have choice. But in some psychological studies, they talk about that you just ignore that which is around you. You're not taught to be a part of a living system. Philosophers are also a bit on this track. I should say something about them because there are many different schools who also try and interpret the human condition. None of that really has to do with developing how human systems work. That requires an envisioning, which you were talking about doing earlier. Learning to envision that we as humans are embedded in living systems and need to understand how those living systems work as a whole, what the role of our species is, and how we can create a place inside of it. There's a wonderful quote, which Henry Williamson offered, which says regeneration can only come with a change of heart. I think it can only come with a change of mind. One aspect of learning about this is learn to question our worldview, our conditioned biases. That's why I say you have to add to it change of mind. Even our interpretations affect us. We can't even know how to understand how we're thinking, why we're thinking the way they are. We accept the false narratives we hear, borrow ideas from others, unexamined, undertested. We call them best practices. But for example, in the behavioral paradigm, coming from the study of rats, we're told that it is all about incentives and punishments, that we have no agency without some environmental conditions. Do you know that that is a 100-year-old theory? And it has been shown to have a very limited case application. And that's with undeveloped folks who are in terrifying situations or operating as like reptiles. It is over 50 years proven to be outdated. And yet, guess what? It's the foundation of all parenting, education in school systems, management systems. It's so entrenched that when I bring this to people, they often have a hard time engaging with it. So there's one last thing, and I'm sorry, this is a little bit long here, but development is foundational to thinking regeneratively because you have to really see these things as alive. There is an intrinsic side to development where we learn to see what drives our thoughts and behaviors. And I bet you this relates to your stepdaughter. Our eyes tend to look outward, and so we see the things that they're doing wrong, but we don't know how to look inward at ourselves. So for example, when you come home from work, you may be in a reactive state of being and you begin to react to things around you, which actually have nothing to do with what triggered the reactivity, but we can't see that. Now, our spouses and partners and children can see that reactivity, but we can't. We haven't learned to be able to watch ourselves, so we still think it's all external. So when I work with companies, one of the most exciting things I hear is how much this has really changed their relationship with their families and how they parent, is to learn to have this capability. So we're born with this potential, which was the third one, but it has to be developed in all that's based on each unique essence of each child who is a whole.
Wow, you're actually reading my mind on that. I was actually imaging myself coming home and then seeing myself in the context once again of this relationship with my daughter. But I can see how these principles almost create the next, building on the one before it. In my stepdaughter's case, I see how conventional ideals of potential and the ones that you kind of referenced earlier actually get in the way of her uniqueness and what she's trying to reveal in the world. The ways in which she not only engages strongly in academia, but also in art, for example. This is a good lesson for me to watch my own biases as I engage with her. So let's take a quick break and thank Rebel, one of our sponsors. So I have to do a shout out to their distinctive products. So I want to thank Rebel Beverages so much. Self-described as offering elixirs that are soulfully crafted to taste creamy and indulgent, what you taste is what you get. The whole ingredients and herbs, that's it. There's no taste bud trickery, just pure, honest sensory delight.
Yeah, you know what excites me the most about Rebel is the way they describe how their products are made, which is every period, single period, ingredient period, bringing it home, Rebel uses is organically grown for our health and our well-being and for the health and well-being of the farmers, the soil, and the natural systems used in its cultivation.
And if you would like to comment or pose a question on this episode or any episode of Business Second Opinion, just subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. We will send you a one-page graphic of the 7 first principles of regeneration. You can post on your wall or share in a conversation in your workplace. Stir up a dialogue that matters. Okay, so far, let's track where we're at. We've gotten through number 4 with 3 to go. So I just want to go back over these in my mind so I can make sure I'm grounded in them. We start with a whole, discover its essence, which tells us where the potential is that can be developed and expressed. Is that a good summary of 1 through 4?
In one sentence. That's pretty good.
Nice.
Yes.
Okay, go for it.
That is a very succinct summary. Just to show how powerful that is, let me just do the opposite of it. The opposite would be that you start with defining a fragment that needs help, like your daughter's homework, and you find all the issues that there are around that. And then you, if you had someone helping you, they might define a clear problem definition. The problem is she's not disciplined. And then you go to work on fixing the problem. And we've watched over and over again, that's how we raise children. That's how we manage employees. That's how we deal with the ecosystem on our planet. That's the mind that the mess we're in came from. You know, remember what Einstein said. The starting point is fragmented. So if you think of the image that always comes to me is dissecting a frog in order to understand how it works rather than studying it hopping around in a colony of frogs in a wetland. By saying that, I'm illustrating the basis for the first 3. Going from the whole through the development, the 5th one really becomes understanding that all of these, just like the frog, is a nested set of holes. Some are greater in affecting the vitality of the next, and some are lesser. A person, for example, like take a child, is nested in a family, which is nested in a neighborhood, which is nested in a nation on a planet. If a nation falls as in war, like has happened in Syria, it affects all neighborhoods, some more than others. And families are torn apart, some more than others. But there is no action or outcome that does not affect the entire nest. So this 5th first principle is that living systems are nested. We tend not to think about the nest that we live in when we do local and global policy, whether it's on a large scale at the federal government or a smaller scale like our local city council. We don't understand that the economic actions we take will spread across a greater system and they'll have unintended consequences. They may or may not get to the ones we had in mind. Learning to read the energies that are at work in that nested set of systems and to be able to see how one actor or a set of action happened and produce a ripple effect on the whole calls for a particular kind of development. It's called living systems thinking. It's a form of thinking that is not built off of the machine, artificial intelligence, borrowed ideas. Some forms really are built off of machine thinking with false equivalency to humans. Like you may have even somewhere along the way studied systems dynamics, which are actually built off of computer systems, or biomimicry, which is built off the study of nature, which is not the same thing as a living system. It's not that those aren't useful and couldn't open doors to engaging in some different things. But to understand living systems at work, they're very incomplete. So that's number 5.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking back to my graduate school, my business school program, and I remember how we learned systems thinking then. So this idea of nestedness is very different from the stock and flow diagrams they taught us back then. And I can also see how much more clearly how nestedness holds my daughter in a strong relationship into the context of the systems in which she's nested and which she's trying to contribute to potentially, rather than keeping her disconnected from those systems.
Yeah, that sets the stage for the last 2 principles, which fit pretty neatly together again. But they're also outside of anything that we normally learn or talk about. The 6th one is about learning to see nodes of energy, where energies come together and can, when they're engaged with, they can affect the whole. Now, that just sounds weird even when I say it out loud, right? But a node comes from the word knot. And it means in the same way that the knot does, where there are different threads, different streams, and they come together and they hold something in place unless it's loosened or cut or perhaps reorganized. It's the work that alternative medicine uses in almost every case, like acupuncture, where they speak of meridians crossing and where a needle can be placed that can evoke an entire reorganization. So energies come apart and reorganize and hold in a different and more effective way. We can even do this with our mind when we have a new way of seeing. Suddenly we go, oh, I see now. Wow. And that's literally a nodal reorganization. We dislodge an old way and we can never see it the same way again. We know how creating these self-organizing processes, if we know how to do that, we can take a single idea or process or a needle, and it's the stuff of magic or transformation. We pray for it with our children all the time. You'll say something, it'll magically untie the knot, and it'll come tied in a different way. But this process of learning to see nodes, knots, and how to reorganize them has to be learned. We have to see all the threads working and the nature of the knot that has formed. If we chop it, there may be nothing left to reorganize, which is what we, when we're not slowing down enough, may do. We are learning, we have to be learning to actually to loosen and allow the meridians, the fixed ideas to relax, to be reframed, maybe be re-envisioned, and then regenerated in a way that evokes the essence of that whole. The seventh one maybe is clear from just listening to all of these first six. The nodal intervention is necessary in order to be able to create the sixth principle, which is working from systemic reciprocity. It means that all entities in all those nests all give and receive nourishment when the system is working regeneratively. There's no one entity seeking to extract value or take assets for itself, unbalancing the whole. If all human beings had developed with a mind that could see the system as a dynamic, complex balance of living beings, each playing a role, making a contribution, it would all become in service of a vital, viable, and evolving whole.
Okay, yeah. So I'm actually really starting to see the interrelatedness of these ideas. It's as though we cannot work on or approach one without the others. So this seems like a system of systems almost. Well, it is. It's not almost. You have to have it all to make it work. So if I have a project or a place to work, I always have to start with a whole, which has an essence and therefore potential. If I skip any one of these, I work on what you might call ameliorating efforts, trying to fix what I don't know is missing. So I can tell if I'm working regeneratively or just calling it regeneration, but seeing if I am following this ordering process of first principles. So I actually remember not long ago, well, maybe it was a while ago, I think it was 2014, come to think of it, there was an article in the Harvard Business Review, and they actually talked about the seven laws of regenerative enterprises. I think it was from November of 2014. It was by Kim Korn and Joseph Pine, now that I'm thinking about it. So how does this correlate with the seven first principles?
I love that question. Actually, other people have mentioned that article too. One of the most popular things in magazines or on any online thing is trying to create a list of things, the seven X's or the four Y's. There's really a reason for why we are as beings attracted to that. We do like order, but order means how things fit together within some sort of system. It's not a matter of assigning that some levels are more important than others. They're all important work, but they tend to be built on one another. Like you couldn't say that the whole idea is more important than anything else, but you could say other things built on it and were connected. We mistakenly have tried to define job titles in that way, where without understanding that everybody actually can do all of the work, and that's what my new book, The Regenerative Business, is about, is understanding levels of work and how people will do all of those orders of work. We need to be able to collectively define what the work is, and you can put numbers against it, but we often tend to, because we don't do the whole first, we don't get that sense of what the whole is, and we don't therefore get the essence. We sometimes then start creating topologies, like, you know, kinds of people, personalities of people. And we again attempt to create order in a way that doesn't start from the order of the whole and start from the essence. So we end up focusing on fragments. The system that is in the Harvard Business Review that you spoke about, the seven laws of regeneration, were an attempt, I think, from this natural drive to create some kind of ordering. And they missed a few things because they weren't thinking from living systems. If you go look at a system itself and you say, now I'm just going to try and look at the patterns in it and I'm going to see how it works, and you don't actually have a foundation like something like living systems and to draw off of, then you often don't go back and look at this hole. Now, the minute you don't start with a hole, which they didn't, you don't have any concrete, real form. Everything becomes abstract. So the piece in the Harvard Business Review was an example, from my perspective at least, that was what happened. They're trying to get 7 of something, or giving them the benefit of the doubt. They, in looking at something, thought they saw 7 categories of something, but they're not a system. And so there's no understanding of the whole mention. Everything else becomes an abstraction. Even when they speak of potential, which you could say, okay, they've got potential in there, you've got potential, but we really mean something very differently. Most people, and I believe so in this case, talk about unleashing potential or using potential, not developing, not seeing it as that something that needs to be developed based on that essence. So you end up without any real foundational principles that come from living systems. So ours don't correlate except with the number 7, and that I do some things around business and enterprises. They're missing, just to mention a couple of other things, they're missing the idea of nestedness and the reciprocity, because they speak about getting people to have meaning from working together and getting some sense of shared purpose. But meaning really doesn't come from people aligning among themselves. It comes from being able to make a contribution to a larger system beyond the one that you're in and to its health and vitality. So the members of organizations that I'm talking about do become attuned, but it's not attuned around a shared internal purpose or some kind of internal working of values. It's around the contribution they're all going to make collectively to stakeholders or beneficiaries, particularly starting with customers or people they're serving. So the search for this ordering, the 7, et cetera, is a natural process, and it's a worthy one. But without the whole and the essence at the beginning, and without working, I believe, with a living systems view, therefore real regeneration, it becomes abstract ideals, not principles to work from.
Yeah, my head is spinning a bit on this, but what seems important, I think, in the end, is that you're looking from the inside out. You're starting from the first principles of what this idea of regeneration is, and they're trying to look at patterns from the outside in. It's almost like they're diagnosing the symptoms and saying, this is what the symptom needs to be. This is the law, when really you're looking at something that's more kind of underlying the idea. Is that kind of what you're saying?
So that's a really good observation. Yeah, if you try and organize based on what you see in existence, you can't quite get there. First principles mean going back to something that we have tested, usually for millennia, as in these that I work with coming from the Mohawk, the Iroquois tradition, and actually show up in many, many ancient traditions, are starting with principles which don't leave us looking at just current existence, and also because we don't usually have the mind developed to do it. So yes, yeah, I think that you're pretty accurate.
Great. Thanks, Carol. That's a lot to think about. So as I'm now kind of reflecting and thinking about this episode in general, I think we need to come back and look at this again. This last reflection on what Harvard Business Review articles had good intentions around and what they missed makes me want to actually look at the history and the idea of regeneration and actually how we got here. I mean, as you said, these first principles are based on kind of millennia of the development of thinking over time. And so that's actually what has me very curious here as well. So why have we not seen all this need for first principles and never learned living systems thinking as a way to see the world? I feel like this is a question that is probably worthy of another episode.
Yeah, probably at least one. You know, it occurs to me also, just engaging with you as we've done this, that maybe there are other people who'd like to engage with this that we could record and eventually have it on air, where they want to test and see if what they're doing is working regeneratively with the project they have, with the venture they're involved in, potentially with the company that they're in. They could even give a, you know, we can engage with them in a way that they could test that, and we would love to do that. So let us know if that interests you at all, and we'll create a part 2.
So I want to thank the sponsor of the show notes for Business Second Opinion, CocoTaps, who offers an American-made and sourced coconut toolkit for opening fresh coconuts at home. Finally, an easy and safe way to enjoy fresh coconut water straight from the source. Coco Vinny, the founder, reminds us that if you're drinking packaged coconut water, you're missing out on about 90% of the nutrients that are stripped away from real fresh coconut water. Now there's a better way. When you're drinking the coconut water straight from the fruit, the natural packaging is biodegradable and the water doesn't need to be pasteurized, which removes the nutrients and ruins the taste. This makes the all-natural coconut water great for the environment and better for you too. Both of our sponsors are working with the idea of systemic reciprocity, you'll notice, which you mentioned, Carol. Does that seem right?
It does.
Thanks, CocoTaps. Remember to subscribe so you can rate and help us make suggestions and comments on these episodes going forward. Our website is businesssecondopinion.com. Business Second Opinion is edited, mixed, and mastered by ResonateRecordings.com. If you have a podcast or want to start a podcast, you can go to ResonateRecordings.com and get your first episode produced for free.